Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer, and it is my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Eric Van Bars, who is serving as our worship associate. We are glad to be together today and glad to welcome you to this religious community, a community that seeks to celebrate and to serve. I would like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time this morning. We are always delighted to have guests at our services and hope that you will stay afterward for our time of fellowship and refreshment downstairs in Fessenden Hall. If you find that you would like more information about the life and work of this community, I encourage you to complete the guest cards, which you can find in the racks and the pews before you. You may place your completed card in the offering basket when it comes to you later in the service, or hand it to a representative of our membership committee who would be glad to greet you at the visitor's table after the service. You can find the visitor's table just around the corner outside the sanctuary, next in the Founders Lounge. There you can also pour yourself a cup of tea and take a look at the collection in our church library. Ours is a church that strives to practice the fragile art of hospitality. And so in that spirit, I invite you to take a moment to turn and greet your neighbors. In addition to asking you to turn off your cell phones, I would like to direct your attention to the thread from the web. That is the insert in your order of service. There you can find several announcements as well as a calendar of events for the week ahead in the church. There are a couple of items that I would like to bring to your attention. Mark Twain will be appearing in our sanctuary this Friday evening, a special performance. More details are available in the thread from the web, and you are all warmly invited and encouraged to attend. And Trish McLaughlin has a special announcement for us.
Have you always loved Irish music but hate the green beer? Loved Irish music but hate that you have to stay up that late? And the songs are not really suitable for children? We have the concert for you this coming Saturday. You'll see lots of posters around the church, green. Some of them will be for the Irish dinner. Someone else is organizing that, but that'll be great too at 6 o'clock. Then hang around for 7. We'll be playing from about 7 till 8:15. Now, you might think you've heard the Celtic Clan of Kent, but you've only heard about half of us. When we play out, there's about 8 of us. We have 2 wonderful vocalists, beautiful harmonies. We have sing-alongs. We have dancing. It's just great. And it's very family-friendly. There'll be refreshments afterwards. You're encouraged to make a donation of at least $5. You'll probably want to donate a lot more. But if less fits your pocketbook, that's fine too. And as we say, children are free. Come next Saturday, 7 p.m.
Next week, you are again invited to join us for worship at 9:30 and 11:15. We will be having a special guest next Sunday, our district executive of the Ohio Meadville District of the Unitarian Universalist Association will be leading our service. The Reverend Joan Van Beesler will be kicking off our stewardship campaign. The title of her sermon is Let Your Love Grow. At the end of today's service, Eric and I would be glad to greet you at the rear of the sanctuary, and once again, I bid you welcome.
I light the chalice in loving memory of an hour lost. We are watching. We are waiting. Now is the time to be observant and to wait for life to renew. Tulip shoots, rigid and plucky, push up and out of the cold dirt and sing the botanical equivalent of na-na-na-na-na-na. While I wait for the other shoe to drop, for the bottom to fall out, for the market to stimulate, I stop and I listen to those tulips. Their music soothes my savage beast.
Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those we know who need our very real love and support. This morning, I invite you to join in celebration with the Slater family, who is welcoming the birth of Samuel Lang. Sarah and Jeff and big brothers William and Bennett are happy to have Samuel at home, and Kathy and Joel are happy to have their granddog at their house while the new family settles in. And we celebrate the birth of Evangeline Grace Berge, Lori McGee and Joe Fatchett's granddaughter. Leanne Ivanov, Evangeline's mother, had an emergency C-section this week, and Evangeline had to have some care in the neonatal intensive care unit, but she is stable, and Leanne is going home, hopefully today, and they hope that Eva will be coming home very soon. And now I invite you to name the people who come on your hearts and minds this morning, the ones you want to memorialize, the ones you want to celebrate, and the ones you want to call into this community of care. For all the names which have been spoken aloud, and those whispered only in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, we give our grateful thanks. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life, come down like the rains. Water our hearts. Quench our thirsty souls. Make us as fertile ground, a place, a people who sustain life, a place, a people filled with life abundant. Amen, and blessed be. Layla was sitting at her desk in her cubicle when she heard the news. Paul just died. She wandered over to the main office area to sit with everyone else in silence. No one knew what to do. After a few minutes, though, they started to talk. How could they support Paul's partner, Les, who had just lost his love? Layla suggested that Les might appreciate some caring visitors. Two of her coworkers agreed to go with her to visit him at his home, where Paul had been able to die. Layla began to make a list of people in the office who might like to contribute money for groceries and flowers for Les. They would stop and pick these up on their way. Over the next few weeks, Layla invited the people in her office to sign up to make a meal for Les. She spent time talking with him about his tender loss and in conversation with her coworkers about the meaning of death. "How do you know how to do all this?" Layla's coworker asked her one day. "Church," Layla said. "I learned how to care for people during difficult times at church." Layla Ibrahim is a longtime member of the First Unitarian Church in Oakland, California. These are her words. "I know the world is often cruel and hard, but it can also be loving and supportive. We have little control over the cruel and hard aspects of life, but we humans have the capacity to make the world more loving and supportive by offering community. While some may look to a loving God to ease life's pains, I believe that we are the primary instruments of a loving God and are responsible for the creation of a more compassionate world. The work of creating a compassionate world does not belong to a select few. It is the responsibility and privilege of us all." I appreciate her use of both the words responsibility and privilege. When considering service as an expression of our liberal faith, I believe it is important to emphasize each of these in equal measure. We often talk about service as responsibility. The idea that each and every person is called to care and to work for a gentler, more just world is woven throughout our storied history. When our kids learn about famous Unitarian Universalists, they learn about people like Clara Barton, who founded the American Red Cross, and Susan B. Anthony, who was a leader in the effort to secure women's right to vote. They learn about Horace Mann, who was a leader in our nation's public school movement, and Benjamin Rush, a physician who started the first free medical dispensary in this country. Unitarians and Universalists have been impassioned leaders in countless areas of social concern, including the movements for educational reform, prison reform, movements against racism and environmental degradation, movements for women's rights and children's rights, and the rights of the mentally ill. Our principles affirm our commitment to the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Our sources affirm our rootedness in Christianity and our embrace of the biblical admonitions to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Unitarian Universalists stand for justice. In our churches, we teach that all people have a responsibility to create the future we dream. But there is more. Unitarian Universalists also stand for love. To love our neighbors as ourselves means that we are called not only to love of neighbor, but also to love of self. We don't talk about that part so much. What does it mean to love ourselves? I think it means that we are called to know both who and whose we are. We are children of the universe, created of stardust, born of earth and water and breath. We are sons and daughters of life, bound in ways we can scarcely comprehend to the source and sustaining spirit of life, which was given to us freely, a gift without measure. We belong not to ourselves, but to each other and to our source, call it whatever you will. When we know who we are, when we embrace love of self and neighbor and the life we share, we understand deeply that we are really one. What we do to each other, we do to ourselves. What we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. Dwelling in greed, fear, and foreboding constricts and diminishes life. Dwelling in generosity, courage, and hope opens and enriches life. When we choose to bless the world, we invariably choose to bless ourselves. Service is not only a responsibility, it is also a privilege granted to all who have been graced by love. Last Sunday, I suggested in my sermon that we are not our jobs, that our lives have many dimensions, and that even when we are out of work or out of satisfying work, we need not regard ourselves as out of meaning and purpose in our lives. Picking up where I left off, I suggest to you today that meaning and purpose can be found in abundance through the spiritual practice of service. To serve is to care, and to find ways to make that care manifest in the world. Service is seeing those society has rendered invisible and acknowledging them with respect. Service is listening and trying to hear. Service is helping. It's giving a ride, folding the laundry, doing the dishes, making a meal. Service is donating money to the places that represent our values and commitments. Service is volunteering, stuffing envelopes, packing boxes of food, tutoring kids, and joining boards. Service is showing up for the rally, turning out for the march, calling our senators and writing letters to the editor. Service is planting trees, picking up trash, using less and recycling more. We serve with our hearts and our minds and always with our bodies. When we serve with intention, with the courage to pay attention and the will to connect and the willingness to be changed, we serve also with our spirits. When we think about spiritual practice, we often think about practices like meditation and yoga, journaling, or prayer. But spiritual practice isn't confined to particular forms. Anything we do with the intention of becoming more awake and connected to the fullness of life can be spiritual practice. Service can be an enriching pathway for spiritual practice in good times, but in uncertain times like these, the spiritual practice of service can be transformational. Consider the perspective of Sharon Salzberg, a Buddhist teacher and author who is regarded by many as one of the finest interpreters of Buddhism in the West. Reflecting on the moral and spiritual impact of the recession we are facing, Salzberg suggests that part of the crisis we're dealing with is the crisis of confronting our own vulnerability. The norms of our culture teach us to avoid vulnerability, and yet many of us are finding that that is not possible at this time. We are burdened by this, she explains, because one of the things that should make us closer to one another is our vulnerability. Anyone who really looks deeply at life knows that life can change on a dime. You get one phone call, and it's a different life. And that is something that should have us determined to help one another and help us experience our closeness to one another, because it is true for all of us. This insight helps illuminate the distinctions between service motivated by sympathy or outrage and spiritually motivated service. When we help another person because we feel sorry for them, not only do we keep ourselves separate, but we also run the risk of disempowering our beneficiaries. But when we help another person because we understand that we too are vulnerable to loss and suffering and could well find ourselves in their shoes, we are serving in the spirit of supportive solidarity. When I was young, there were times when my mom had to make difficult choices between bills and rent, bills and food. And so sometimes we were the beneficiaries of other people's charity. Even as a 10, an 11, and 12-year-old, I can remember what it felt like when people gave us clothes or food with a sense of judgment, a sense of holding themselves separate. When that happened, I often felt a twinge of shame or embarrassment for the situation we were in. It made it hard to appreciate the gifts. But other times, the clothes and food were given with a sense of humility. I remember one year just before Thanksgiving when one of my sister's teachers stopped by our house unexpectedly with bags of food, warm wishes, and a simple explanation. "I know times are hard, and I just thought maybe you could use some of these things for your holiday." That day, I helped put away the food with a sense of appreciation and excitement. How we serve makes a difference. Why we serve makes a difference. Dorothy Day, founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, put it this way: Do not give to the poor expecting to get their gratitude so that you can feel good about yourself. If you do, your giving will be thin and short-lived, and that is not what the poor need. It will only impoverish them further. Give only if you are someone for whom giving is its own reward. I believe a similar ethic applies when we are engaging in service on behalf of some movement or cause. When we choose to serve an organization or cause that we believe in because we feel that we have some superior knowledge or skill to offer, not only do we keep ourselves separate, but we can be difficult to work with. But when we choose to give out of a sense of solidarity, we not only connect, but also empower. How we serve makes a difference. Why we serve makes a difference. When we choose to serve as spiritual practice, we are not only making a difference for a person or a people or a movement, we are also enriching and enlarging our own lives. I know that there are many of you in this room who could come up here and testify to this truth. This is a religious community of celebration and of service. As your minister, I often have the privilege of witness. I have been witness to the care you extend to your parents and your children and your spouses when they need help. I have been witness to the care you extend to your friends in the church when trouble comes knocking on their doors. I have been witness to the care you extend to the members of this religious community, even the people that you don't know that well. The cards, the casseroles, the rides, they matter immensely. I have been witness to the care you extend to the people of our community, collecting toiletries for safer futures, food for the pantry shelves at Kent Social Services, money for the emergency heating fund at the Community Action Council. And I have been witness to the care you extend to the world, paying attention to the affairs of our day and finding small ways to help make a difference. Church is a place where we get to practice serving spiritually, a place where we learn not only by giving, but also by receiving. I want to say that again because if you take nothing else from this sermon, I want you to take this. We learn the spiritual practice of service in this church not only by giving, but also by receiving. Indeed, by learning how to accept the freely given care of another, we also learn something about the art of giving freely and graciously when it's our turn to serve. Hear these words from historian and social activist Howard Zinn. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, and kindness. What we choose to emphasize in this complex of history will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act and at least the possibility of sending this spinning top of a world in a different direction. And if we do act, in however a small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents, and to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory. When it's our turn to serve, when we are moved by the calls of love and justice to share what we have to give, we can trust that our service transforms. Every act taken in service of the world we dream makes the dream real, if only for a moment. Every day gives us countless opportunities to practice making it so. Let this practice be our promise. Let this practice be our prayer. Amen, and blessed be. I send you with these words from St. Francis of Assisi. Where hate rules, let us bring love. Where sorrow, joy. Let us strive to comfort others more than to be comforted, to understand others rather than be understood, to love others more than we seek to be loved, for it is in giving that we receive, and in pardoning that we are pardoned. Go in peace.